From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and thank you for joining us on Korean Context. My name is Jenna Gibson, and I'll be your host today. This week's topic is Korean literature, which has been in the news lately after Han Kang won the Man Booker Prize this year for her novel, The Vegetarian. So this is a very interesting topic that I think, unfortunately, a lot of people here in the U.S. don't know about, so we're very excited to dig into it. This week's guest is Dr. Susan Hwang, who is an assistant professor in contemporary Korean literature and culture studies in the Department of East Asian Languages and Culture at Indiana University. She specializes in contemporary literature and culture, and she recently got her PhD from the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. So we're very excited to talk to her today. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Hwang.
Thank you for the invitation, Jenna.
So to get into it, as I mentioned briefly, although the situation has improved over the years, it seems like Korean literature is still relatively unknown outside of Korea. Do you think that this is the case? And if so, why? Do you have any recommendations to improve the situation?
So, you know, I think that certainly was the case until perhaps 10 to 15 years ago. But, you know, as you put it so yourself, I think the situation has improved substantially when it comes to the visibility of Korean literature outside of Korea, and particularly among the English language readership. And this has to do, I think, with two major phenomena which are related with one another. One, of course, would be the growth in sort of both the breadth and quality of Korean literature and translation. And over the last couple of decades, we've had many new translators emerge on the scene. And with that, we've witnessed not only a rise in the quantity of translation output, but also a real diversification of literary voices, since, you know, different translators are going to be drawn towards different kinds of writers and styles and themes. And with that came sort of this refinement of the overall quality of translation. And Korean literature that's now available to international readers, well, in the past, it used to be, for the most part, limited to translation of works that were unilaterally deemed to be representative of traditional and modern Korean literature and culture. So basically works that have been long canonized within Korea. But I think the kind of works that we see now today in English language translation, particularly over the last 10 to 15 years, have grown a lot more multivalent and diverse in terms of aesthetics and style and content matter. So that's sort of the first phenomenon. And the second phenomenon that might be considered is sort of this movement on the part of the South Korean government to promote translation as well as publication of Korean literature in the global literary market on the one hand. And then we have the growing interest of the Anglo-American publishers in Korean literature on the other hand. So, you know, literature over the last decade or so has sort of been enlisted in the South Korean government's efforts to promote Korean culture at large in the global market. And this is, of course, in light of how Korean pop culture has emerged as sort of the fastest growing export in South Korea over the last two decades. You know, whether it be in the form of K-pop or K-drama or digital media, and culture has sort of become the largest source of commodity, enabling Korea's global exchange. And I think literature, though the degree of government subsidies is far less than, you know, that popular culture, literature is still very much part and parcel of that drive to commercialize culture as products. And with this, I think there's been an increase in the kind of subsidies available to translators of Korean literature. And a major institution that's been playing an indispensable role here is the Literature Translation Institute of Korea, or LTI Korea, which not only commissions translations around the world, but also hosts a number of workshops for both aspiring translators, and they also develop programs such as book tours by the authors and translators to travel to different parts of the world to promote Korean literature across the globe.
Yeah, I know. I follow Altea Korea on Facebook, and they have some free short stories and things like that. So they're actually a really great resource. And hopefully, you know, getting even more and more translations. And I know that we were talking a lot about, obviously, English language. We're talking in English, but they have lots of different languages that they're trying to promote as well, which I think is really cool.
Yes.
So we recently saw some big news in the realm of Korean literature. As I mentioned in the introduction, Hong Kong's The Vegetarian won this year's Man Booker Prize, which is the first Korean author to do so. So what, if anything, does this award mean for Korean literature going forward? And do you think these kinds of awards can spark more interest in Korean literature?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as any international literary awards go, this is definitely a cause for celebration. But what was significant to me, at least, is that this year, the Man Booker International Prize was reconfigured to grant recognition to the writer as well as the translator. So Deborah Smith, who translated The Vegetarian, I think she also rose to prominence in the field of literary translation. So this was really the first time that Korean literature gained visibility in light of the merit of the literary work itself, but also in light of the quality of translation and the efforts of the translator in rendering the work of fiction successfully into another language for, in this case, for English language readers. So in terms of what this particular award means for Korean literature, for me at least, is that it allowed everyone to get a sense of the importance of literary translation and what it can really do to render Korean literature, make it available outside of, you know, its sort of domestic literary scene. And The Vegetarian, I mean, it's a very powerful and imaginative, and it's a thoroughly well-crafted story about an ordinary housewife who, you know, in light of her willful decision to become a vegetarian, invites all kinds of cruel sort of response on the part of the male figures in her household, including her husband and her father. And I think Han's novel really invites the readers to think about not only gender relations, but the human cost of imposing violence upon others, as well as upon oneself, and, you know, the meaning behind using one's own body as a means of resistance. And what's most powerful about this book is that it doesn't lend itself to clear-cut answers to these questions. And yet it's a vivid story that, you know, leads to painful realizations about, you know, important universal concepts such as human nature, the body, and, you know, body as resistance, and how that can contest different means of violence. So I think this is what strikes a deep chord, not just among domestic readers, but universally across different cultures. And this last point about the universality of this story is something that I think might be worth thinking about. So I think the case of The Vegetarian and the Man Booker Award sort of lends itself to the question of what really are the different factors involved in determining, you know, the popularity, the dissemination of a work of literature outside of its own language and domestic readership. Also, another question we can pose in that regard would be, you know, what are the standards of these kind of literary awards or international literary awards? By which I mean, you know, are standards of literary aesthetics unilaterally congruous across different literary cultures? Because these are all questions that are being actively wrestled with among literary scholars today, in light of especially the cultural globalization and the growing attention given to categories such as world literature. So Man Booker is, you know, only one of the various international awards that can grant a mark of global recognition, which then gets retranslated into the domestic culture from which the literary work or writer has come from. And, you know, with The Vegetarian, we saw definite examples of that with the proliferation of media coverage after the Man Booker Prize was awarded, right? So, you know, what does this mean then? That's another question. When a work, you know, within its domestic readership gains prestige after gaining recognition outside of its own culture, and not just outside, but by an institution or, you know, within a literary culture that has long been dominant and even hegemonic when it comes to determining the aesthetic standards of literature. I mean, there's an element of cultural politics here that cannot simply be set aside. And another common example in this regard would be sort of the obsession over Nobel Prize, which is not just witnessed in Korea, but you know, different literary cultures across the globe.
That's a really interesting point, because I know that I've seen some articles, especially after The Vegetarian started getting more interest, that Korea really wants a Nobel Prize. They really want a Nobel Prize in literature. And they're hoping that that might be the case in a few years. And so that's a really interesting point. You know, what determines what's good in the light of the fact that things can be good in so many different ways. I really like the way you put that. I want to get on to also, because you mentioned that now we're getting some more recognition for literature and translation as well with this change to the Man Booker Prize. And I'm curious, because I saw that you study the theory and practice of translation. Can you give us kind of a glimpse into the translation process? And how can a translator keep the spirit of a work when translating it into another language? And I'm really curious, especially because Korean and English are so different. How are there particular challenges when translating languages that are so drastically different, like Korean and English?
Yeah, I mean, translation is a really complex process, to say the least, which involves a lot of decision-making on various levels, you know, from syntax to rendering these culturally specific terms that don't lend themselves to be translated easily into other languages or cultures. And here, a lot of times, translators are often faced with the question of fidelity. Like, who should you be faithful to? You know, is it the original text and the source language and culture that it has traveled from? Or, you know, is it the readers and the target language and culture that the text is traveling to? So here a lot of translators remain divided. One group of translators would say that if you're so concerned with being faithful to the original, then you're really not translating for the readers, but for the work itself. And the reading experience for these readers would be too foreignizing and too unfamiliar. So these group of translators would argue that the job of the translator is first and foremost to move the author to the reader. But another group of translators would argue the exact opposite, saying that it is the translator's role to move the reader to the author, even if it means that the reader has to perform the extra legwork of figuring out what different cultural signifiers or references in the original text actually mean. Now, this mode of translation is, you know, in and of itself kind of an ethical response that emerges out of some sort of discontent with the readership that remains more or less complacent in one's own culture and language and, you know, sees no necessity in having to figure out the idioms and specificities of cultures and languages other than one's own. And oftentimes this sort of latter response, it's much more relevant when you're translating a text from a lesser known or lesser established literary culture, such as Korean, into a far more powerful and hegemonic literary culture of the Anglo-American literary culture, which is, I mean, founded upon English, which happens to be lingua franca. So this is the politics that translators must reckon with, and the kind and the degree of mediation that they must perform to render a work of Korean literature into English, where it's not just a question of the vast difference in terms of linguistic registers, but there is a definite element of cultural politics that must be reckoned as well.
I thought it was also really interesting when I was reading your biography, I saw that you don't just study the written word, but also engage with different media such as film, digital media. What can you tell us about these different forms of storytelling in Korea?
So my particular interest in these different forms of cultural media really stems from the question of how culture becomes the locus of social protest and political movement. And this is actually why I'm most interested in teaching literature of the 1970s and 80s. And that actually happens to be the subject matter of my own current project, my dissertation. Because in the 70s and 80s, literature was really at the helm of all cultural manifestation. And literature and writers really led the way in allowing not only the intellectuals and activists, but the people, the laborers and the students and the oppressed, all of them, like leading them in a counter-state movement against the authoritarian regimes of Park Chung-hee and Chun Doo-hwan. And then, you know, come mid to late 80s, what we have is kind of a proliferation of protest songs. So we have really this emergence of a song movement. And songs really became the medium through which protesters were able to voice their dissent against various repressions and anti-democratic apparatuses of the state. So that sort of explains my own interest in the protest song movement in the 80s. And then, you know, come late 90s and the 2000s, what we see is a proliferation of films. So like cinema in the 2000s, we have films ranging from Save the Green Planet, or 지구를 지켜라 in Korean. And then the famous director Park Chan-wook and his series on the Vengeance trilogies, that really underneath their veil of artistry and, you know, all sort of visual graphics, are really speaking out against different forms of social injustice. So in and of themselves, these films are participating in a cultural movement or a protest in and of themselves. But now I think that kind of real energy can be found in webtoons or webcomics in Korea. And we saw recent examples with Miseng, or The Incomplete Life, and Songgot, or Piercer. So we have, you know, webcomics, webtoons, different forms of digital media, and your podcast. As I am participating now, podcasts are also a form of digital media that works in the service of, you know, sort of this cultural movement in voicing opinions about the society and politics. So I guess my interest in all these different kinds of cultural forms really stems from, as I said, how different cultural media at different stages of modern and contemporary Korean history effectively allowed for social protests or political movements to take place.
I'm really glad that you mentioned Miseng. I really enjoyed that comic. And then, of course, they made it into a drama as well. And just showing kind of the absurdity of daily life in such a powerful way. I really enjoyed that. So I do want to give you a chance before we sign off. Do you have any recommendations for our readers as far as your favorite books or stories or poems, things that they can read to get more into Korean literature?
So there are many, perhaps too many, so I'll just pick out two or three. So I'm really into, you know, female writers or the works of female writers such as Han Gang. So, you know, Han Gang happens to be one of my favorites as well. But one of my longtime favorites is actually a writer named Park Wan-seo, who is widely translated. And she's such a prolific writer. I think she's a really important writer who is writing in post-Korean War space, because she really presents complex ways of thinking about sort of the monumental historical paradigms such as, you know, the war or democratization or industrialization through somewhat unlikely concepts such as sex or domesticity of life and love and memories and etc. So I really enjoy reading Park Won-seo's work, and when I'm teaching Korean literature, I also engage the students in her stories and novels quite a bit. And then a second writer, more contemporary, that I would want to recommend is Kim Yong-ha, who is sort of known as the writer who hails the 90s sensibility. And he's also been translated. And in particular, I would recommend his novel called 빛의 제국. It was translated as Your Republic is Calling You by Kim Ji-young. And in this novel, Kim Yong-ha is really writing about the post-developmental culture of consumption in South Korea in the 1990s and the 2000s. And, you know, Kim Yong-ha is a writer who's very perceptive about what Korean society is like after the monumental experiences of industrialization and democratization, which to this day sort of stand out as the two historical processes that shaped modern Korea as we see it today. And then lastly, a poet that I might recommend is Jung Ho-sung. Jung Ho-sung is a highly prolific and hugely popular poet in South Korea. And he made his literary debut in 1973. And since then, you know, he's been publishing numerous collections of poems and continues to compose actively in the present day. And the way I see Jung Ho-sung is that his themes really vary greatly from those that reflect, you know, social reality like poverty or alienation of people in modern day world. But he also writes on themes that deal with, you know, universal human suffering, but also finding hope in midst of despair. And his poems are very compassionate and humble in style. So I think a lot of, you know, his poetic power emanates from the fact that both his poetic style and subject matter really speak to Korean readers at large, and not just to a specific group of, you know, class or gender or what have you. And actually, a recent volume has come out. It's a bilingual volume, so it's got the original on the one side and then the English translation on the other. And it was published by a Korean company called Seoul Selection. And it was co-translated by a prolific translator named Brother Anthony, who used to teach literature at Seogang University in Korea, and myself. So we co-translated this volume of poetry by Jung Ho-sung. So that's available as well. So these are kind of the, you know, if I were to make any recommendations, the three that I would highly recommend.
Okay, that's great. I'll have to get reading. So thank you so much for your time, for your insights, and thank you for your recommendations as well.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, this was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us here on Korean Context. We have a lot of great guests lined up for the fall, so be sure to keep track of our podcast by subscribing on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. And tune in again next week for another great episode.